This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, reflections on the season as told by members of the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. I'm producer and host for this series, Stan Wright, and I'd like to share with you some thoughts on the season. This Christmas time of year is usually a time when traditions play a major role in the lives of various families, and those traditions come in many forms, from the places you visit, the people you see, the gifts that you share, the food you cook and consume, the songs you sing. When I was a child, somehow the color red seems to be one of the biggest memories of early traditions in my family. From as far back as I can remember, years of which I won't reveal in number, I can remember the color red very vividly. For many Christmas Eves, my family would join other families at the Grandma and Grandpa Bingham home. The Binghams were a Welsh family who came from Wales and brought their stock and trade along with them and created a business called Bingham Boatworks out in North Marquette off of County Road 550. And that was where we would go for Christmas Eve. I and the rest of the grandchildren would congregate there. Whoever could be there. Wasn't always a full house every year. And we would get the same thing from our grandma and grandpa. You see, they didn't have a rich life, monetarily speaking, though they did all right. The richness was in seeing the children, especially grandchildren, every year. Well, the one gift that us boys would get would be a flannel shirt. And more often than not, that shirt would be red. There was also a lot of red in the decorations in the home, particularly in the ribbon that was hanging around the house, especially with the mistletoe, which I always seem to get caught under with one of the cousins and have to give her a kiss. At that age, that wasn't very welcome. And, of course, on the tree, lots of red decorations there. And there was always the red of the shirt that my Grandpa Bingham would wear. He seemed to enjoy red flannel a lot, and apparently that's why us grandchildren would receive it as well. The girls wouldn't get a red flannel shirt, though. They'd get a sweater. So everyone was given some article of clothing as a Christmas gift. Outside the kitchen window, however, was another red memory of mine. There was a long platform or shelf that was a bird feeder for the many, many birds that would come visit my grandparents' home throughout the year. There were birds of all types, particularly chickadees. And there were also nuthatches, wrens, and finches, and particularly cardinals. Now, growing up, I don't recall seeing cardinals very often around here in the Upper Peninsula. I know they're here, of course, because there was always at least one family of cardinals visiting my grandparents' feeder. And I could not remember how often I would just sit there, but when I did, I would sit and just stare at these birds. Beautiful red feathers. And the dark, piercing eyes. It was quite a sight to see, and I always seemed to enjoy that more than any other part of the visit. Until, of course, the food came out. There was always a lot of great food there. The Bingham Boatworks buildings included a very tall storage building, which at first I didn't know had a purpose, until one year I was allowed to see what was inside. The doors were opened, and inside was this enormous wooden yacht. I don't know how many people it could sleep. I can't remember. I'm sure I was told, but as we all know, memories don't always treat you well. But what I do remember is the way it looked and how it smelled. I was allowed to take a look up into the boat itself. It was there because the Bingham Boat Works not only built boats, but also repaired and restored boats of all sizes and shapes and types and for whatever purpose needed. This was a yacht that belonged to the Fords. And it was being restored and repaired. All wood. Well, with some brass. Quite a bit of brass, actually. But it was all wood. And all types of wood, from oak and mahogany to maple and pine and teak wood as well. It was just a beautiful thing. Now, Christmas memories and traditions also change as you grow up. And one of the traditions that seemed to go away were the red flannel shirts, because as the years went by, we had fewer and fewer visits to Grandma and Grandpa Bingham's house, and that Christmas Eve tradition seemed to go away for whatever reason. But other traditions took its place. One tradition in particular is Lebkuchen. Now, Lebkuchen, for those of you who are not familiar, is a translation to love cakes. And they're a meal in and of themselves. The recipe I grew up with was a very dark molasses, honey-based recipe that was loaded with spices, from cinnamon, ginger, and cloves to anise and allspice, with lemon zest and, of course, lots of sugar and pepper. And it was an interesting recipe to try to put together. You see, Lebkuchen is a heavy cookie, very heavy, as you probably could tell from the ingredients, at least in the recipe that I grew up with and still own. And when you mix the wet ingredients together, that's the easy part. Then it comes time to add the dry ingredients, in particular the flour. Lots and lots of flour. It is a love cake, of course. I cannot count how many times a wooden spoon handle would break in our hand when we try stirring in the flour. We never had one of those big mixers with a batter beater on it so that it would do the work for you. It was always done by hand. And the recipe size was so large that it took almost a whole bag of flour to complete it. But I didn't mind the work. When I got old enough to help out my Grandma Doris and my great-grandma Gert in making these Lebkuchen, I looked forward to it every year and worked as hard as I could and tried not to break the spoon. Certainly don't want any slivers of wood in with your cookies. But the end result was marvelous. We would always glaze it with this powdered sugar and milk glaze and then put some jimmies on it, or sprinkles, sometimes little candy beads. It would be a very, very colorful collection of cookies. And they weren't always circular. We'd use cookie cutters and shape them in various sizes and types, from Christmas trees to bells to diamonds to Santa Claus heads. And of course, that made the decorating even more interesting, because then you had to create the face of Santa right on the cookie. It was a labor of love. But somehow it never lasted very long, especially when I and my brother began raiding the cookie jars. And we'd get handfuls of these Lebkuchen and great big glasses of milk and steal off to the living room of my grandmother's house and gorge ourselves silly. Each cookie was a meal in and of itself, with all those ingredients, but still, somehow we found a way to eat at least a dozen at a time, and then roll ourselves back home, complaining about our stomachs, and waiting for the next visit so we could raid the cookie jar again. There was hard candy also. Now there's a recipe that I still marvel at. The physics of hard candy is rather mind-boggling for a young boy. When you're putting all of that ingredient into the bowl and you start boiling it on the stove, the smell is amazing. Then this concoction is poured onto a cookie sheet and spread out. and it's so hot, it seems to want to melt the sheet right into the table. But in no time at all, it becomes this big, smelly slab of goodness. I'll admit, these days I don't eat hard candy anymore. But when I was that age, well, quite a bit younger than now, the part I enjoyed most was borrowing my grandpa's hammer, washing off the head of the hammer, and beating the living daylights out of the rock candy so that it would get broken down into bite-sized shards. That was probably the most fun about the whole thing. Of course, traditions change as time passes. And then I became a parent and began developing traditions of our own in our family. Our first child was born in 1986, Michael. The first Christmas with him, when he was only about 8 months old, was rather uneventful for him. But then, from those years on, it was a great time, enjoying Christmas with your own child. A couple of years after that, however, a civil war started breaking out in his bloodstream, called leukemia. And the Christmases from that point on were even more precious than before. We did our best, my wife Carol and I, to make Michael's Christmases memorable and as happy as possible, despite the sadness and fear that we both felt. And for 4 straight years, we did that. And each year, Michael had wonderful gifts to receive and enjoy. He relished opening each gift very carefully and enjoying each of the new additions to his collection of toys and games, never rushing through the opening. Christmas morning was actually an all-day affair with him. He would take one gift at a time, open it up, show it to everybody. We'd take pictures, and then he'd spend time with it, really ignoring everything else until we'd finally remind him that we'd have to eat sometime. Why don't you open another gift? Okay. So we'd go through the same ritual again, somewhat of a tradition in and of itself. His cousin Matthew, however, was quite the opposite. During the couple of Christmases that the two shared together before Michael's death, you would see Michael carefully opening each gift. And in the time it took for him to open his one gift, Matthew had everything torn open, all the papers scattered all over the floor, and then he'd wonder why it took so long for Cousin to get the job done. Every once in a while, he'd try to help Michael open a gift or two, and there'd be a little bit of an argument, but overall it was a lot of fun, at least from this old man's memory. Matthew is now graduated from high school, and as far as I know, he still rips into his gifts like a wild man, tearing open everything all at once. There's a tradition. About the year that Michael passed away, it was still a couple of months before Christmas. But we also had another child added to the family that same year, about 7.5 months before Michael's passing. Our daughter Caitlin was born. That first Christmas without Michael was one of the most gut-wrenching times of my life. Despite the fact we had a beautiful little princess, it just wasn't the same. But Christmases since have grown into more happy times, because somehow we see both Caitlin and Michael opening those presents at the same time. You see, Caitlin does the very same thing that Michael did. One present at a time, opening very carefully, trying to save the paper even, and relishing each gift, taking all the time she needs, until she's reminded to open something else. So somehow Michael's there opening gifts again, every Christmas time. And in her expressions we can see his smile, many of his mannerisms, and certainly his wry sense of humor. so tradition lives on. I hope someday to develop new traditions with my grandchildren. I can wait. Caitlin's in middle school, after all. It's going to be a few years. But when the day comes when she brings her children to our home, maybe I'll have a red flannel shirt waiting under the tree. Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a Public Radio 90 production produced at the WNMU-FM studios in the Learning Resources Center on the campus of Northern Michigan University. I'm your producer and host, Stan Wright. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.